Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
All right, welcome to Mighty Parenting, episode 6. My name is Sandy Fowler. I am here again with my co-host, cohort, as she says, partner in crime, Judy Davis. We are getting back to basics today, at least 21st century basics, with a topic that affects every family. It's something that our parents certainly never had to deal with. And honestly, for many of us, it's a subject that we don't necessarily know a lot about. Many parents are just now learning the ropes, finding out the do's and don'ts, and trying to figure out what we do with our kids with social media.
Oh my gosh, Sandy, you know I could get up on my soapbox about this one. You know, social media is such a huge part of our lives. And it's really becoming an integral part of our kids' lives. And it can impact them in so many ways, both good and bad. I know personally, our kids were already in their early teens when cell phones and smartphones became a thing. And literally now, they walk around with computers in their hands all the time. It's like they're connected to everything 24/7. And for a long time, I was clueless about what that meant, and I didn't know that you could block people from seeing your messages. I didn't know that there's such a thing as Snapchat or Boomerang, which is why I am thrilled to have our expert today with us, and that is Mandy Majors. She is the founder of Next Talk. And Mandy graduated from Indiana University with a BA in political science and criminal justice. How interesting is that? She is the author of Talk, A Practical Approach to Cyber Parenting and Open Communication, and the founder and executive director of Next Talk, which is a nonprofit organization that is passionate about helping families develop and open communications for their kids online. It's such a need, Mandy. Thank you so much for being here today. I can't wait to dig in.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Mandy, you know, I was talking at the beginning of the show saying, you know, many of us parents are just learning the ropes, or maybe we use social media, but like me, I really just use it for work. I have some connection personally, but if I didn't use it for work, I don't know if I would do that personally. So we don't necessarily get why our kids love this. Like, what's the draw? What do they want or need from this, from social media and being online with these things all the time?
Well, think about your kids and them coming home. When we came home, it was watch the latest TV show or whatever. Our kids race home to see the latest post on YouTube by their favorite YouTuber, right? It's all social media fed. Our kids want that. They want to be the next YouTuber. They want the likes. They want the popularity. They know that you can have instant fame by sitting on the other side of that computer screen and doing your thing online. And that's appealing to them. And as parents, I know we can often dismiss and say that's so stupid or that's not cool, but it's their culture that they're growing up in. So, you know, I like to tell parents we have to understand that culture if we're going to talk to them about it, if we're going to parent that. Whether we allow them to have social media or not, they're still kind of exposed to it because other kids can show them things, tell them things they hear online. So one thing we like to say at our nonprofit is, you know, when you give your kids social media or a cell phone, that's your family, your choice. And I think that kind of looks differently for everyone because you know your child better than I know your child. You know when that child is ready to take on social media. But what we cannot do is delay conversations around social media because whether they have it or not, kids are being exposed to a lot earlier now, and we have to step up our game in having conversation around it.
So that was an interesting point there, Mandy. As you said, I'm going to reframe it, but flat out no isn't a solution. It can be what you're doing in your house that you're saying, no, you can't have access to social media, but that is not a solution to say, well, we don't have it, so I don't have to worry about it. Plus, when they get older, and you can, you know, maybe you'd be addressing this, you know, high school and college, employers ask about it. I have one child who does not like social media at all. And we've actually wondered about that and gone, is that going to be a problem for her in job hunting?
Mm-hmm.
So I think no's not, it's an option, but not a solution.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, and you know, you may have a child that is easily offended by comments or not getting likes, and you may want to protect that child and say, you're not going to have social media for a while. And, you know, these are the reasons. But you still have to have a lot of conversations about what kids are seeing on social media, because they're talking about it at the school lunch table. And I say that because my story started when my kid was in fourth grade. Now she's in eighth grade. But she did not have a phone, and I thought she was completely safe from everything on the online world. And she was told about pornography in graphic detail at the school lunch table. And so that was my eye opener that, look, I can delay the phone as long as I want, but I cannot delay the conversations. Like, mm-hmm. I cannot delay the conversations. And so, and when I talk about social media, I mean, think about it. Our kids can see murders live streamed now on social media. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have social media, but their friends do, they go to school and their friends can say, did you see the so-and-so? What happened on social media today? So they're automatically exposed to that. And that kind of environment parents need to step up their game as far as being able to talk to their kids through these things and help them process it. Because it's hard for us to wrap, you know, it's hard for me to wrap my 40-year-old brain around seeing violence live streamed, or the hate that I see sometimes on social media, or cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. And so when they're exposed to that, they need help processing that. They need help understanding that is a person on the other side of that screen. Mm-hmm. You know, that is somebody's child.
So as a parent, if I'm not on social media and I don't even understand the different platforms and how they function, what can I do to empower myself with the information to be able to support my child as they dive into this world that, you know, you're telling us they want to be part of?
Well, they do want to be part of it. And I don't know if you've heard of FOMO. It is fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even kids who don't have social media think, okay, what are those kids doing online? Because there's all kinds of relationships and friendships that are established online through your friends at school that you mm-hmm. you know, that are safe. I mean, I'm not talking about talking with a stranger. And so there's that FOMO. I would say to parents who don't have social media, I mean, here's the thing. You don't have to love it. You don't have to be on it every day, but be in it, you know, be in their online world. I'm not an IT person. I don't have an IT degree. You know, I'm in my daughter's online world. I don't comment on her stuff. I like it because they all want likes. But, you know, there's rules, too, for when you're following your kid on social media. You want to respect their boundaries. You want to give them space. You know, one thing that I did when our experience happened was, before I realized, okay, conversation and creating a conversation in our home was the actual way to keep her safe and be able to actually speak into all these things that she's being exposed to. Before that happened, I kind of wanted to go into overdrive mode, and I wanted to control everything. Mm-hmm. And I set all kinds of restrictions and I did all that. And guess what? Bad stuff still came through. Right. And so I love telling parents, use the tools, use the monitoring apps, do random phone checks, do all of that. All of those are great things. But here's what I want to tell you. If your kids want to hide something from you, they're always one step ahead of us. They're going to know how to hide it. And so really the first line of defense in protecting your kid is that conversation. And to create that kind of conversation, often we have to look in the mirror and fix things about ourselves, because we're doing things to shut down our kids when they're trying to tell us things.
I need you to explain that to me, Mandy, because I'm not necessarily seeing what you're talking about.
So let me tell you this story. So my daughter, she's eighth grade now, so she has Instagram. And one time she came around the corner and her eyes were very wide and I could tell something was very wrong. And she said, there's a bad picture on Instagram. And I said, okay, let me look at it. Y'all, it was straight up like naked woman on the bed, spread eagle, like bad pornography, like naked, not skinny, like skimpy. It was naked. And so as a parent, my default response is, I hate social media. You're never going back on social media. I hate Instagram, or give me that phone. I'm throwing, because you just exposed my baby to pornography, right? I've had to redo how I respond to that. And so I learned, I set the phone down and I looked at her and I said, I am so proud of you. This is what I mean. When you see something online that is not appropriate and you know that it's messing with your head, this is what I need you to do. And so you're telling me that I can trust you, which means you get more freedom online. Okay. And I know that sounds crazy, but if we want them to come to us and really tell us what they're seeing and hearing online, we got to be prepared to hear it, because there's some bad stuff online that they're seeing, and it's confusing them. I mean, we're seeing suicide rates skyrocket. Mm-hmm. There are major things happening. They have got to have a safe place to talk through it.
Exactly. I love that when you say, if you want them to come to you, you have to be open to hearing what they're telling you. It's all about that listening thing. And it's critical, especially in those teen and young adult years. Our kids need us to listen, which kind of takes me on a little bit of a tangent, Mandy, yeah, about something that you talk about in your book. And that is, you know, we want to protect our kids. We want to kind of insulate them from anything that could go wrong. Mm-hmm. And when they're tethered to their devices, seeking that approval, it's almost as if they become addicted to that social media. And could you address that in general?
Well, absolutely. And in my book, I go through some conversations that you need to have before your kids get social media. And these, and then they're really ongoing conversations. But once you've launched them into social media, and by the way, I would say give your kid one social media platform at a time. They don't, if they're just getting a phone, they don't need Snapchat, Instagram, and all of them all at once. Start with one like Instagram, where you can monitor a little bit more than you could Snapchat. And yeah, and follow along that. Make sure their posting guidelines are good. Talk with them about what's appropriate, what's too much information that the world doesn't need to know. What's, you know, have those simple conversations with them. And then as you monitor that, you know, if you see your kid getting moody when they don't get likes, or one that teenagers do often, and I have lots of conversation with my teen about this, is they say, if I don't have 30 likes by the first hour that I'm posting, then I'm taking it down. Okay, that there's a conversation there. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to take down something just because somebody doesn't like it, we need to talk about why you're posting it. You're posting a little bit of your life that you're sharing with the world, whether they like it or not, that doesn't matter. This is who you are. And you have to know from within when you post something that you're confident in it, you know? But as far as the screen addiction, you got to watch. If they're getting moody, if they're saying, you know, I feel bad about myself because I didn't get this many likes, they need to step away. They need to withdraw from that. You know, I have a girl and a boy, and my girl loves social media. My son is more of a gamer type person. And sometimes he'll be gaming, and I'll say, and by the way, when I speak of gaming, I'm talking about like things like Roblox, which a lot of elementary age kids are on. Parents, be aware, that's a lot like social media. There's a chat running all the time where your kid's talking with strangers at all times. Now, they can go in a private area and talk, but you want them to stay in the public area. And you need to always say, if somebody tries to move you into a private area to have a conversation while you're gaming or wherever, or on social media, that's a red flag. Because if you don't know that person in real life, that's a stranger, and they could lie about their identity, you know, so that's an important conversation to have about online strangers. But getting back to my son, the gaming, he'll get angry sometimes at the game, and I'll hear him get frustrated. And instead of telling him things like, well, I don't think that's good for you, or just like, get off your screen right now, I'm not having it. Instead of doing things like that, I will ask open-ended questions. And I will say, bud, why do you think you're angry right now? 9 times out of 10, he will answer on himself and saying, I've been on the screen too long. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as they get older, we want to teach them to self-regulate. We want to teach them, okay, this is a healthy balance. You know, one guideline we have in our home is our kids just don't have phones in bedrooms. We just don't. At bedtime, they check in the devices with us. They go to their beds. And we talk about why we do that. It's not that we don't trust them. It's because they need sleep. Their minds need that time. They need a healthy balance of screens and no screens. And we all are struggling with this. I know as working from home, I'm getting texts all day. I have to model this for my kids.
Right.
You know, because I could be on social media during dinner time and that's not okay. Because if our family guideline is no screens at dinner time, like I got to model that first. They're looking to me to model it. I could go on and on, guys.
Oh, yes.
Well, I liked what you brought up there, Mandy, because you said, you know, yes, use the tools that are out there, but you're also teaching us to help our kids find that balance. You're saying teach them how to self-regulate, and the older Absolutely. They get, the more they should be able to do that. And what you said here actually ties into other conversations we've had with experts where it's instead of telling the kids, oh, well, you know, you've been on the screen too much. Well, why do you think you are, you know, fill in the feeling. Why do you think you are feeling this way? What can you do about it? How can you prevent that in the future? You know, why are you posting this if it makes you feel bad when people don't like it? What are you using social media for? Having that conversation, those conversations, that thought process. And again, going back to, you know, just a little loop back to, this is out there forever, and this is out there for employers, for, you know, future friends or spouses or partners or anything that, you know, you want to do in your life. This stuff's out there. And so I love the way that you're helping us learn to raise our kids. Do you have any other quick points on helping them find balance, you know, understanding why they're doing what they're doing? Putting phones away at bedtime, yes. Any other quick tips for that finding balance?
Well, I would say they're going to look to you. They model you. And I struggle. I will be the first to admit that I struggle with this. I have tried to set a guideline in my home from 5 to 8 that I'm not on my phone at all. And there are nights when I have to break that rule because something big is happening at work or I need to respond to somebody's text. And I will tell them that. But just communicate with them about how you're struggling with this too. You know, we are learning social media right along with our kids. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you see something on a screen that makes you sad or jealous or less than, talk that over with your kid because most likely they're probably feeling the same way. You know, they're just processing it from their age point. And so I would say that conversation is going to be the number one defining thing to get you through social media. And like I said, I'm a both and kind of gal. I want you to use all the restrictions. I want you to do the monitoring. I want you to do all of that. But I'm telling you, there are things they're going to see or hear about and you're not going to see it. And you're not going to be following it. It's going to be DM'd. It's going to be hidden. And you need to have the kind of relationship where your kid will come to you and be like, this happened on DM. Can we talk about this?
Exactly. And DM meaning direct message.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And before we wrap up today, because we could talk about this for hours on end, but I am asked by parents over and over, and I would love to get your opinion as the expert, what is the age that you recommend kids begin that initial, you know, toe in to social media? And are there certain platforms that you would say, that's one that you really shouldn't start until age X?
So this is really hard because again, I think you know your child more than I know your child and mm-hmm. you know when they're ready. And I think it's going to look different for each children that you have. You know, one of them may be more ready for social media than another one is. I would caution parents of this. They don't realize, we sometimes don't realize that there are things social media that we don't think is social media. Let me give you an example. Musical.ly, there are tons of elementary age kids on Musical.ly. And I've even talked to parents before where they say, my kid's not having social media, but they have Musical.ly. And I'm like, whoa, Musical.ly, like strangers can like your kid's post. I mean, it's social media. You can connect with people online It's a sort of social media platform. So I think we need to be careful about what we think about social media. Anytime your kid is online and has the ability to communicate with a stranger, there are a lot of conversations that need to be had to make sure that they are protected.
Okay. Interesting. And the other thing is, the thought that went through my head in answer to Judy's questions, one thing I would do, Judy, is ask my kid, okay, so what social media was it that you wanted to be on? Because I might say, well, you can have these platforms, and maybe they weren't even asking for that or didn't know about it or have any desire for it. But now, because it's there, it was like, you know, I went to a meeting last night. I was fine when I went there. They had all the cookies and brownies and everything out. I walked past them once, and then everybody else started walking in the room with their little plates with all the desserts. And well, next thing you know, I'm eating cookies. So I think that, you know, we can ask the kids, and it also opens that conversation that Mandy, you've been telling us to have, is if I say, what platform do you want? Well, why do you want it? What do you want to do with it? How does, you show me, how does this work? How do you connect with people?
Mm-hmm. Sandy, that's a great point. The older kid, they love to tell you how things work online. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of them do. I mean, my teen will, I'll be trying to do something and she'll just take it out of my hand and do it for me and then hand it back to me. She loves to do that to me, right?
Yeah.
So ask them, be a part of that conversation and be in their online world for sure. I mean, I know it's scary. Most of them are very simple and you don't have to spend hours on social media every day. You don't.
Yeah. And I love, again, that idea of that's that opening to go, okay, if you're going to be in here, I'm going to be in here too. So you need to show me how this works.
Right. Mm-hmm. I would definitely say Snapchat is one that needs to be reserved for older kids, trustworthy kids that you've already established in another platform. You know, Facebook, Instagram, most teens like Instagram first. I find that around sixth or seventh grade or earlier. Most kids want that Instagram first. Mm-hmm. That's typically what they do. And then they start asking for Snapchat. And I would say delay Snapchat as long as you can. You need to be able to trust your child completely on social media first, and you need to make sure they are telling you everything that's happening.
Can you tell us why that's the case? Because listeners may not understand what Snapchat is. And I firmly agree with you about that. But can you explain what Snapchat is?
So first of all, can I say that I feel like Snapchat gets a bad rap. I love Snapchat. A lot of the reason is a practical reason. It doesn't take up phone space. So think of Snapchat as the new way to text. That's really what it is, except they text in pictures. Okay. So Snapchat is, you'll text something. So for instance, my mom and I are now Snapchatting each other. I've got my mom on Snapchat. She will text me a 30-second video. I miss you. This is what I'm doing today. I love you. Whatever. That's it. I play it and then it disappears.
And yeah, that's the kicker. That's why we have to trust them, is because it all disappears. We can never see what happened.
Well, but here's the thing. Anything can be screenshot. So I know a lot of parents are fearful that nudes are being traded on mm-hmm. Snapchat, and they are, but nudes are also being traded on Instagram. Right. All day long in DM. That's happening. So what I want to tell parents is if you've established that line of communication, if Instagram has been handled well, if they're telling you, and when I say by telling you things that they're seeing, be specific. Like, you need a list. For us, it's if you see anyone in a bathing suit or less, not that bathing suits are bad, but that's just our threshold. Or if you see violence, if you see somebody threatening someone, if you hear or see anything about kissing, dating, or marriage, like, those are the things I want to know about. Be specific in what you want reported to you. Mm-hmm. And if they report to you, you're going to know it. Because if they're on social media and they're never telling you anything, they're not telling you what they're really hearing and seeing online.
Okay.
I mean, my kids, every day there is a list of what they've seen online. Every day.
Well, and speaking of lists, I have lists of questions, but we have to wrap up. So I just want to go back and touch on a couple of things. And one is, you've shown us that social media is cultural. This is part of our culture. Mm-hmm. Even if your child does not have access to their own, they will be exposed to it. Also, to make our decisions about that based on our home and our values and our child, but to remember that culturally there would be, like you said, FOMO, fear of missing out. And that's something for us to consider in choosing when if and when to let our child participate. Use the tools, just don't believe that it's enough. We need to be prepared to have our kids come to us with the yuck that they will run across. And when they do, we need to be that safe space for them. We need to listen to them, tell them how proud we are that they came to us, and help them to move forward through it, to deal with whatever it is that they saw. And then as far as kind of just doing pulse checks to go, you know, is my kid having a problem with this? Are they maybe getting addicted? We should be looking for moodiness, depending on, you know, what they've seen or experienced, if they are changing their posts or their actions due to likes and things, and keep an eye on that. And then help them find balance. And here's the tough one. Help them find balance by modeling it.
That's and, a tough one.
And the biggie, be present with them. So I think I kind of got our major points there, Mandy. There's so much. And so I know that people are going to have questions. They're going to want more from you. Where can they find you to get that?
Yes. So they can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Next Talk, on Instagram and Twitter. It's nexttalk.org. You can go to our website, nexttalk.org. I also have a website, mandymajors.com. You can find me in all of those places.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Mandy, so much for being here today. You gave us such great information. I cannot wait for our listeners to hear all that you said. And I want everyone out in listening land to stay tuned for Real Talk right after this quick message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child, and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dacium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
So Sandy, we're here at Real Talk again, and I am so sick of you putting me on the spot that today I am turning the table.
I'm nervous now. All right. Okay.
Yes.
Turn.
So,
you get to pick.
Yes, exactly. So as our kids get older and they get more involved in activities at school or after school, it's easy for us as parents to say, yes, yes, yes. And all of a sudden we are overwhelmed in this tizzy of trying to be at 10 different places. We're on the PTA, we're on this committee, we're helping out with soccer, we're helping do this. And it's like, we cannot parent effectively in that state. And I know you have talked me off the ledge so many times and helped me not create a mess all over the place. So I know you have tons of strategies and insight into, one, how we get in this mess in the first place, and two, how to untangle ourselves. So go.
Okay. So yes. And I'm laughing because when I speak to groups of women, their very favorite piece of any talk I do is this. And it is what you're talking about here. And that is that we're over-involved because we say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about the word no, and you will not possibly give me enough time to actually do that whole thing here. So what I want to do is, first of all, say, this is our own responsibility and our own fault. And I'm not doing that to poke at us or point fingers. I'm doing that to give us the opportunity and the power to be able to fix it. Mm. If we don't accept that we created this mess, then we don't have the power to fix it.
Oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way, because it's real easy hindsight to go, oh yeah, I said yes, 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 and created the mess. But when I'm in it, I'm just trying to do right by my kids.
Yeah.
And it's really hard when they have a need, you know, a group has a need that's going to impact my kids and help them, for me to say no.
So here's what we're going to do, Judy. We're going to actually go to more of that coaching realm. So we're going to talk about a scenario here that you just brought up is,
okay,
I'm saying yes to be a better parent, to help my kids.
Right.
So what I need you to do is go, okay, pick something you just volunteered for.
Being the soccer mom. Let's just say that when my kids were young, I volunteered to be a soccer mom.
Okay, so you had to make food and
coordinate who's bringing snacks, coordinate who's bringing the mid roll or the mid game, you know, during the game break, whatever it's called.
Right.
Whoever's bringing the treat for that and the treat afterwards, and who's helping with fundraising and who's helping us get from point A to point B, coordinating all of that. It's a full-time job.
Yeah.
Volunteering became a full-time job.
Yeah. I think probably other moms, if I know at one point when I was a stay-at-home mom, my husband just looked at me and said, if you're going to volunteer that much, you maybe want to think about getting a job.
Exactly.
But that's what happens. Yeah. And so your intention was, I am volunteering because this helps my kid be able to play soccer.
Because no one else was stepping up.
That was it. Yes. And that's what I thought was going to come up. Yep. So this is one of the most common reasons that people volunteer for things. Nobody else was stepping up.
Mm.
So the things that I remind us of are, one, just because no one else steps up doesn't mean you're the best person to do the job. And it doesn't mean you're the right person to do the job. And sometimes people won't step up in the moment. They need time to go home. They need time to think about it. They need time to let it soak in, to process. Judy, you think fast.
I do.
So you're sitting there when someone asks for a volunteer and you're running through all these scenarios and you've already realized what happens if somebody doesn't step up and do it and gone through all those things. Someone else hasn't gotten there yet. Or someone else is thinking, wow, you know, that could be kind of cool, but I don't know if I could do it. Maybe they don't have the courage to step up at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, sometimes when you step into that spot that you don't want, that you know in your gut you should not be doing, you're actually stealing it from someone else.
It's interesting that you say it that way because, you know, I don't know a parent out there that doesn't already have a full plate. We all are carrying two plates full over, you know, things are falling off and we're trying to balance all the, you know, balls in the air. And it's real easy to add one more. And there's something that you taught me a long time ago is a rule that I now share all over is, I can't say yes until I let something else go.
Yes.
Because we're busy. Why is that so critical? Because I want our listeners to get that concept because it has freed me from combustion so many times. Why is it so important that we have to trade off before saying yes to anything else?
Okay, so it's easier to understand this in terms of our like our home. So just pick one room in the house. Let's go into the kitchen. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Every cupboard is probably full. In fact, sure. Very likely full to bursting, right? And maybe you're a person who keeps things on the counter too. And you see a new gadget. You see the Instant Pot. That was the big thing this Christmas, right? Instant Pot. So you see Instant Pot and go, oh, wow, that would be so cool. But you literally have no place to put it. I mean, if you get it, you're going to have to like set it right next to the sink where you're supposed to put the dirty dishes to clean them off. When you get that and you put that there, instead of helping you, it's actually making your life even more difficult and it's hurting you.
Mm-hmm.
So there comes a point where literally physically in your kitchen or in your house, wherever, you would have to say, before we can bring in something new, we have to get rid of something. And that makes sense. They go, well, I got an Instant Pot so I can get rid of the crock pot.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use this instead. Yeah. Our time is the same way. It can only be so full. And if you don't look at it and say, okay, before I add soccer mom to this, I'm going to let go of this, or in this case, because it was such a big job, I need to let go of this and this and this. What happens to you if you don't make that conscious choice now is every single day, you will have to make 100 other choices about how to spend your time. Since you cannot physically fit all the things you need to do into your day, you're constantly, as you go from one thing to the next, deciding, and you don't even know you're doing it, but you're deciding, am I going to get the laundry or am I going to make that phone call? Am I going to, you know, stop at the grocery store after I get the kids, or do I need to come home and prep the stuff for the soccer practice? And you're going to be making tons and tons of painful choices because you don't have enough time to do everything. And then at the end of the day, something has to give. So either the things that you chose not to do just fall off the plate, and don't get done, or you don't sleep.
Gosh,
and you do a whole show on sleep. But it's really what it comes down to is you can make 100 painful decisions, or you can make one what feels more painful in the moment decision, but then be done.
So what I'm hearing you say is, extrapolating from all that you've talked about, it's like when you're in somewhere and they're looking for help, be self-disciplined enough not to say yes immediately, to take it back and evaluate it, and then look at it in a holistic way as opposed to just that specific thing. You got to look at your whole thing.
Yes. And I know, you know, we're covering a lot today, and Judy, you've done a lot of coaching with me, stress relief and anxiety relief. Yeah. And we've gone through a lot of tools, but that's that. Yes. Those are some key pieces, is take a moment. And if anyone asks you to do anything, a simple way to do that is just say, let me check my schedule and talk to some people and think about it, and I will get back with you. And that's always your answer. I don't care how much you want to do it. You still got to go and look at your life and your schedule and talk to, you know, other people who help take care of your kids or whatever. So yes,
exactly.
Thank you for asking. Let me think about it. I'll get back to you.
Right. Well, I know we have so much more to dive in on this general topic.
But you're going to stop.
I'm going to put you on your little in the spotlight later. But today we're going to have to cut it off there. And I just want to thank our listeners for joining us and remind you to, well, actually, I'm going to let Sandy
talk about
the ending.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, we have a little free gift for you at mightyparentingpodcast.com. When you ask for emails to be notified about new shows, you not only get notified about new shows so you don't miss something that you really want to hear, you also get a nice little gift from us, little inspiration for your parenting journey. And come on over to the Facebook group. We are in there. We are chatting. We are asking questions and answering questions and sharing things. And we need your input. We need to know what worked for you, as well as knowing what your questions are. You know, other parents are looking for the answers that you have. So come on over there and join us and join the other parents, and come back next week for Mighty Parenting Podcast. Until then,
bye. Have a great day.